This podcast includes graphic depictions of true crime cases and may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, everyone, and welcome to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin.
And this is Jackie.
And welcome to part two of our series and deep dive on Heaven's Gate.
The ascension awaits.
Indeed, it does. We're not quite up to Hale-Bopp yet, but we are making our way there. It gets pretty nutty here in a little bit. So if you listen to our first episode in the series, we started with Marshall Applewhite and Bonnie Lou Nettles. Bonnie Lou Nettles. And basically started from the ground up, right? Their birth, early 20s, and up until the point where they met. So now we have Marshall Applewhite, whom most of you may recognize from any Heaven's Gate news coverage whatsoever.
Oh, yeah, his crazy eyes and his little, like, floaty head. It always feels disconnected when you see, like, videos and photos of him.
Every time I see him, I think of the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, the Grand Wizard.
Yeah, the Grand Wizard.
Wait,
the Wizard.
Let's not call him Grand Wizard. No. That's bad. I think I mean the Wizard.
Yeah, the Wizard, and how he's kind of floating on that hologram or whatever on the screen. I have no idea why, but that is exactly what he reminds me of.
I love that we went a little bit of his background and his story, because you can tell that he's not of alien origin. And you would expect that somebody with a background and a cult based on alien origins would be like, I was born an alien.
He did. And that's the interesting part of Heaven's Gate, and something that we will be covering in the next couple of episodes, is that they're more so than most cults. I think that a lot of cults have their leader will come up with a book or, you know, tenets or their laws or whatever, their doctrine, and they'll stick to it. Heaven's Gate was very fluid. We'll get into some of it on this episode, but it's very fluid and it changed around a lot. But yes, I agree. How can you tell someone that you are of alien origin?
That's fascinating. And what's even more fascinating is the verbiage that they use for this cult is very identical to a lot of other ones, like Julie Bro and Love is One.
Love is One.
Yeah, the ascension part.
Yeah, it seems like the leader will say the end of the world is coming. Here is why you should follow me. I am the one true savior of humanity. And then it doesn't happen.
And then here's your Kool-Aid.
Exactly. Before we continue on, let's just get our housekeeping out of the way. You can find us at www.wesawthedevil.com for our website. And on our website, you can find links to our merch if you want to order a t-shirt or sticker.
If you're looking to support the show and have gifts to give out, maybe birthdays, maybe holidays. Oh, wait, Halloween's coming. Feel free to visit our shop and maybe we can have a little giveaway.
Yes, we do plan on having a giveaway in October. If you're enjoying the show and you would like to have deeper access or become part of the team, feel free to check us out on Patreon. That's patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil. Or you can go to our website and click on support us. And we have a variety of tiers with benefits, everything from postcards, stickers, t-shirts, merch, private Facebook group, one-on-one access, and so forth. So if you are interested in getting closer to us,
join us on the dark side. We have stickers.
We do. Other than that, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at We Saw the Devil and on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. If you are fast forwarding through this, stop right now. Mm-hmm. I want you to hear this because this is very important. If you're going to leave an iTunes review for us, we're going to pick one person to get a $50 package from the far reaches of the world of gloriousness for true crime.
Indeed. We are doing a giveaway. And all you have to do is leave us an iTunes review.
Yeah, and just
preferably 5 stars.
I understand.
Just soon. And we're going to pick one person, and you are going to get a $50 worth mystery package from us. It's going to include, obviously, some We Saw the Devil merch.
No nudes, I mean noodles. You're not getting ramen noodles for $50 worth of ramen noodles.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
Endless supply.
And lots of just true crime goodness. So again, leave us a review, preferably 5 stars, and we will pick one person on October 1st.
One of you will be chosen to go to the island.
Yes, we'll pick one person on October 1st, and you will get this exotic.
From the far reaches of the world of true crime in this package. I mean, I'm not making any promises. It's not body parts, but you'll like it.
So send us your submission, and that would be a screenshot of your review, and you will be entered into the contest where you will get some really cool merch and true crime goodies at a $50 value.
This isn't the first time we've done like a giveaway. We give away Amazon gift cards and stuff for people who do cool stuff for us or come up with taglines, but this is different. This is different because you actually get a huge package.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about my huge package, okay? We're talking about an awesome true crime package.
So I think enough with the housekeeping. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about cults.
Let's talk about Heaven's Gate.
Okay, so we are going to pick up exactly where we left off in the first episode. And that was where 46-year-old registered nurse Bonnie Nettles. And her companion, a 41-year-old divorced, self-loathing gay man named Marshall Applewhite, packed up their things, bid farewell to their families, and then hit the road. And if you, again, have not listened to part one, you are going to want to catch up before you continue with us on our journey through part two. Bonnie and Marshall drove all over. When they left Texas, they ended up driving all over the western half of the United States. They camped along the West Coast, they meditated, they spoke to people, they read the King James Version Bible, and they shared science fiction novels. They were destitute. They're freshly divorced, they left their children or families, and they had no money. So they often ate buttered bread or rolls for meals, like multiple meals a day, and sold their blood at local blood banks just to get gas money in order to get from point A to point B. They camped underneath the stars at the beach, at rest stops, in the woods, off of highways. If it got really tough, they ended up panhandling for money. So they were not having necessarily an easy way. Keep in mind that their relationship was not sexual. I think that in society, most of us attribute if a man and a woman run off together and, you know, cult leaders and whatnot, usually it's of a sexual nature.
Yes.
Not the case.
Crazy.
So one day while they were in Oregon, they were having a meditation session when it came to them. They saw it clearly. They had the vision. They determined they were the two end time witnesses mentioned in the book of Revelation. Now, in the book of Revelation, the two witnesses are two of God's prophets who are seen in a vision, and they appear during the second woe, which is in Revelation chapter 11, verses 1 through 14. Marshall and Bonnie believe that they were these two witnesses and that they had to share their message of what they had seen. And it's here where Applewhite and Nettles started calling themselves the two. And that's the first. Now, what you'll learn as we go through this is that they go through a whole series of aliases. As their belief systems change, they start calling themselves different names.
It just seems a little Dr. Seuss, doesn't it?
It does.
Thing one and thing two.
It does.
The two.
Oh, it gets better here shortly. So they continued. They started to hone in on their message, and they continued to travel and preach this message of them being the two witnesses. They were extremely poorly received by almost everyone, because at this point, it was just the two of them, and they mainly hit up New Age occult bookstores, and then they even tried traditional churches, which, can you imagine?
Imagine showing up to like a Baptist church and be like, right? Boy, do I have something for you.
Now, they frequently wrote letters to friends and family back in Texas. And after receiving their visions, Bonnie's daughter, Terry, received a letter from her mom saying, quote, "I am not kidding, baby. This is for real."
What's for real?
One of Bonnie's friends, a woman by the name of Sharon Morgan, received a letter from Bonnie stating, quote, "We are not anything we were in the past." And Sharon begins to correspond with Bonnie. And so she seemed really supportive of their ideas, so the pair decides to go back to Texas to anoint her as their first official follower.
Now, so wait, hold on. Sharon, right? Mm-hmm. How did they get in contact with Sharon?
Sharon was one of Bonnie's longtime friends. And so when Bonnie was out on the road, she would write letters to her daughter, her children, her friends, and Sharon just happened to be one of her friends that she wrote letters to.
Okay, so she was writing letters and was obviously kind of on her way to be a follower?
Yes.
Okay.
On the way back to Texas, so Marshall and Bonnie determined to anoint Sharon. They head down to Texas. So they stop in Dallas for a lecture and they meet with Sharon. She, there on the spot, took off her wedding ring, quit her job, left her husband and two daughters, and then just got in the car and hit the road with them.
Sounds a little familiar.
It does, doesn't it? The two called her Chela, which they said meant student in Sanskrit. They headed straight for Wyoming to preach their new doctrine. And the three of them ended up traveling all over the country. They preached their extraterrestrial religion, and that's kind of what it became geared towards, is the extraterrestrials. And Sharon would go into the bookstores and churches and ask, quote, would you be interested in talking to two people who can tell you how to leave the planet and take your body with you?
I'm going to have to pass. Also, it's so funny they went to Wyoming so they could preach to all two people that actually live there. And back then, like, absolutely nobody lived in Wyoming, and hardly anybody lives in Wyoming right now.
No, it's true.
And back then, I can imagine all two people being like, wow, they're UFOs, huh?
By the sound of it, you had three very different personalities. You had Bonnie Lou Nettles, who was very, very, very smart, very intellectual. She had a great education, and she was more business-minded. Then you had Marshall, and he was very charismatic, and he could convince you. He had the crazy blue eyes, and people loved talking to him, but he was really bad at the business portion. Then you had Sharon, and Sharon was the business person of the group, of the three of them. She became responsible for booking them gigs, talking her way into churches, talking her way into bookstores. So they had this kind of like little threesome down for the beginning of their group, and it was working really, really well. But here's the problem. Sharon came from a life of luxury. She had a husband, they had a nice big house, she had children, she had a car, and she left her life to go live with her friend and this crazy other man, and they had no money. So they started using Sharon's credit cards.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. So they started using Sharon's credit cards to stay in hotels, motels, for food, clothing, gas, so on and so forth. Now, Sharon was only with them for 4 weeks, and they would make the rounds all across the western side of the country, right? So they were heading finally back to Dallas, Texas, and Sharon was looking forward to visiting with one of her old friends. She had not made any plans, however, to check in with her husband or children. In fact, she instructed her friend to not tell her husband that she was coming back. Her friend did not do that. Sharon shows up, and her friend is standing there with her husband, who immediately grabbed her and took her home. And
I don't blame them.
No. On the way back to Texas, before they had gotten there and before this had transpired, right, Marshall had rented a car in St. Louis using Sharon's credit card. Obviously, Sharon okayed this. So when he finally arrived in Texas, for some reason, Marshall Applewhite did not return the car. So they get to Texas, Sharon's husband steals her off, and then Marshall's like, well, F it, I'll just keep the car.
Because good people do good things, right?
Right. Subsequently, he was arrested for automobile theft, and angry with Applewhite and Nettles, Sharon's husband accused Bonnie Lou of credit card fraud. So they were both arrested. The charges against Bonnie were eventually dropped, but Marshall ends up getting extradited back to Missouri and spent 6 months in jail.
Is that for auto theft, the 6 months?
Yes.
Oh, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. That's madness. Who's just like, I need to steal this rental car.
Right? I'm just going to keep it. And this is apparently, and this is something that Sharon has said, is that this is the beginning for Marshall and Bonnie, where they said that human laws don't apply to them.
So the slope starts slipping.
The slope starts slipping. That human physical laws, man-made laws, don't apply to them.
So 6 months wasn't enough.
6 months apparently wasn't enough, and Marshall spent that time very carefully. He further honed in and formed the group's eventual belief system. And at this point, now, if you recall in our previous episode, he grew up very devoutly religious. His father was a Presbyterian minister. He was very devout, very strict. Part of the self-loathing behavior that he had as a gay man was because of his strict religious upbringing. When he met Bonnie Lou Nettles a year before, she introduced him to spiritualism, seances, more occult-based things. As he spent time in jail, he too strayed further from traditional Christianity. And he actually went more towards aliens, extraterrestrials, UFOs. And all of these things started to make a bigger appearance in his writings. And a, quote, demonstration of their truths would come within months, he wrote. Like Jesus, the two would be killed, only to be resurrected in a, quote, cloud of light. And that awesome cloud is what humans refer to as a UFO.
Sounds legit. I think I read that in the Bible once, right?
Right. They have no real active followers. So Marshall gets out of prison, and he and Bonnie once again hit the road. Here, at this point, they're actually claiming that they were extraterrestrials themselves. They were Christ-like and sent to Earth in human form.
So did he, like, lose his mind in prison and just, like, it just got worse?
Well, what's Bonnie's excuse?
I mean, she was crazy before. I don't know.
Bonnie was actually the one who introduced him to all of this stuff.
Oh, this is crazy.
So they're believing at this point, and they're telling people as they're doing their speaking engagements that they have no memory of their life before this moment.
They call that amnesia, and I'm going to assume somebody along the way got a TBI. Are they beating each other over the head? Because I would like to do that.
In the beginning, they preached about the importance of purifying one's soul. And they also dropped a lot of the occult elements that Bonnie had initially brought to the table, instead now moving almost solely to extraterrestrial-based beliefs. So here are a few of the group's early beliefs and tenets. Number one, first and foremost, above all, there was to be no form of sexual relations. None. You were to be chaste. Number two, of course, members would need to exist without food, comfort, or sexual satisfaction.
Oh, that's rude.
Number three, traditional religion is not to be trusted. Number four, the human vessel, your body, will be abandoned for the evolutionary level above human, or Tela. This perhaps is the foundation of this entire Heaven's Gate group, is Tela, the evolutionary level above human. It's a place of higher consciousness, again, where your spirit will live. So,
and this is mentioned throughout a lot of their doctrine, right? And this is a continuous theme that they bring forth over and over again, right?
It is. And as you see members throughout the next 20 years, they always, when they write letters to their parents or their families, they usually close it by saying, "We will see you on the next level." So this is a very important concept in understanding Heaven's Gate.
It sounds like a threat to me. If someone's like, "I'll see you on the next level," I'm like, "Excuse me? Are you inviting me to see me outside? How about that?" Like,
now, number five, they believed in something called the ancient astronaut hypothesis. And yes, this is exactly what you think it is. You know that meme that's going around of the guy with the crazy ass hair who's like, "But aliens." it's that guy. This is the belief that during ancient times, extraterrestrials visited humankind and that all religions are based off of aliens. And you guessed it, alien technology was in fact given to us as a gift by the aliens. So building the pyramids, Stonehenge, like all the crazy crap that they believed, it's all apparently a gift from aliens.
I feel like that's a little bit harmless. I know I've met so many people who actually believe that.
Yeah, no, and people do. It is a very, very, very big thing, so much so that the History Channel decided to create a show based on it.
I love how aliens on the History Channel always have cone heads.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we'll get there too.
No, don't say it.
And perhaps the other foundation of the belief system is that they had a very strong belief that an alien spaceship would come down and take the true believers away with them. The flight is nearing, and that it will only take place when the members give their power to the extraterrestrials. And you guessed it, you can only get your power if you purify your soul using the methods and the rules that Bonnie and Marshall provided.
Yeah, basically be asexual.
Asexual.
Eat bread and butter. Live out of a car.
Yep.
Panhandle.
Mm-hmm.
And steal a rental car on someone else's credit card and get arrested.
Yes. Sounds so legit.
Yes.
So at this point, Marshall and Bonnie now started to call themselves Guinea and Pig.
Oh, God.
Respectfully. And the two referred to themselves as human guinea pigs that the aliens were using for various spiritual experiments.
That sounds lovely.
Now, here we already have the first, they were alien beings put on Earth in human form. And now they're human beings being used by the aliens for experiments. They have a lot of contradictions all throughout their belief systems.
Yeah, like what happened to them being the two, thing one and thing two?
Now they're guinea and pig.
Oh, okay. I mean, mm-hmm. We're just creative with ourselves.
Yep. They were so poorly received by most places that they stopped at. I think it was trial and error. What worked? Okay, well, this isn't working. Let's try something else. Let's rename ourselves. Let's rebrand ourselves. Oh, that people found that a little weird and off-putting. Okay, let's change it here. And I believe that that's what they were probably doing.
I'm sure they got a lot of feedback from all two people in Wyoming. Yeah. And they're like, "Can you fill out the survey?" And they're like, "Why are you on my farm right now?"
In fact, each stop that they made was an attempt at recruiting. They wanted followers to join them on their mission to attain a higher consciousness and thereby access the promised land in a universe of aliens. Now, in March of 1975, Applewhite and Nettles saved their money and then mailed out a crap ton of pamphlets to the public to spread the extraterrestrials' message. One passage in the pamphlet actually insinuated that Marshall was now a reincarnated version of Jesus.
Wait, so he is one of the two, one of the witnesses, He's a prophet from Revelations.
Yep.
And now he's a Guinean pig or part of Guinean pig. I don't even know which one is.
That's like a bad 70s band.
Is his name Pig? Because I'm going to call him Pig. And so he's Pig. And now he's like a reincarnation of Jesus.
Yes.
Excellent.
In California, they ended up convincing 25 people to stop, drop, and roll with everything and join them. They did a presentation at a New Age center, and 25 people joined them. They made it up the coast to Oregon. In Oregon, a college professor of a New Age religions course invited the two of them to present their ideas to his students. After this lecture, 32 out of the 50 students in that classroom converted.
What?
And left university. To go travel with them.
Anybody who calls them Guinean pig is not getting my vote.
At this point, they were starting to attract followers and make a name for themselves. And by the end of the summer in 1975, the group had traveled over 8,000 miles in a single month. And they had amassed over 100 followers caravanning with them on the road. I mean, that's just insane to me. And they especially flourished in the American Southwest. Now, if you have to think about the time frame here, it's 1975. We've already gone through the 1950s and the 1960s. You have the Jetsons, you have NASA, right? Man on the Moon, the extreme interest in space.
But we're missing something. They only traveled 8,000 miles. And little did they know that even to get to the moon, it's over 200,000 miles. That's a short journey for people who believe that they are from outer space.
It is true. Also, talking about aliens, apparently, especially in the Southwest, because what also happened in the 1940s in New Mexico?
Oh, yeah, Roswell. Huh? Yeah.
And it was still a hot topic. And especially because of NASA, the space race and the boom, there was a lot of activity with testing and things like that from NASA and the military. So a lot of people actually did have firsthand, quote, encounters with UFOs, what we know as an unidentified flying object. People actually took it seriously. There was a huge interest in UFOs and aliens, and are they out there?
X-Files.
Yeah, X-Files, exactly. And comics started really getting in on the alien stuff and everything like that. As much as we look back on it and think, wow, that is fucking ridiculous, people ate it up and they really took it to heart. How does one become a follower, might you ask?
My body's ready.
To join, a follower had to cut ties with their past as a whole. They had to separate from their material possessions and they had to cut all contact with family, friends, and acquaintances. Boy, does that sound normal.
That sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm. They also had to agree with all rules established by Applewhite and Nettles, which there were plenty of them. So again, no questions asked, agree to everything that we say.
What's a cult without rules and unquestionable following?
And another one was they had to be flexible, which is basically the same thing as being compliant. So sit down, shut up, and do as we tell you. Members thought of themselves as students of Applewhite and Nettles, which if you're watching The Vow on HBO, all of his students, all of the people who were in The Vow, Nixium, also saw themselves as students. So it's a mindset. It's a psychological mindset that is created in order to have this authoritarian relationship.
Well, it's systematic, right? Mm-hmm. We grow up feeling like our teachers are our authority.
Exactly.
You know, you grow up and it's almost like child daycare. You know, they become your second mother or
this
father.
This is adult daycare.
Mm-hmm.
Also, which I found interesting is that members were also assigned a partner in the group who would be able to monitor their daily lives. And this was meant so they could hold each other accountable for the no sexual relations piece. And not just the sexual relations piece, dwelling on materialism. Any human emotion, you were not supposed to have emotions. So they gave you a partner so that you guys could basically be sad sacks together. They also, again, followed very strict diets because, remember, the entire goal is that extraterrestrials do not need human food for sustenance.
Well, food is expensive for them.
Right.
So it's just easier to be like, hey, starve yourself.
And I'm sure that the, you know, 100 or 200 people with them are really not like, hey, we're totally down with this buttered roll crap 3 times a day or maybe even 1 time a day. Each day was different. It was almost like a weird boot camp. And again, you see this with Love Has One and Nixium. Some days, members had to meet their partners every 12 minutes. Other days, they would meet them once. Sometimes they would go a day or two. And they weren't supposed to sleep. So again, you're not supposed to sleep.
Oh, wow. This is like...
check mark.
Yeah, I hope that the Love Has One people are listening. They're like, wait a minute. Should I become one of them?
Oh my God, they're getting confused right now.
Yeah, I bet they are. They're like, oh, should I follow that instead?
And occasionally, Jackie, to your point, Applewhite would have them wear a cone on their head to simulate how they would feel when they received their extraterrestrial cones.
Oh my God, that's so cute.
Because Applewhite believed literally that aliens would look like cone heads.
Aww. Mm-hmm. You know what? So does Discovery Channel for some reason. It confuses the hell out of me.
I only see the little grays, like the little gray aliens, the grays.
And, well, the grays, yeah, that's what they're called. Mm-hmm. If anyone wants to do a little research on aliens, they actually have, like, there's a
different species.
Yeah, different species.
Yeah, that people have claimed to see.
Yeah, and I feel like Discovery Channel wants the conehead thing to be real because the Peruvian people, ancient Peruvians, used to actually misshapen their heads on purpose.
Yep, exactly.
From birth, because don't forget, when you're born with a head as a baby, it's actually cartilage, a lot of it. There's mm-hmm. a percentage of cartilage, so it's malleable over time if you squish it.
They squish their heads.
Yeah, into cones almost, like the Peruvian people. So when they found the remains, that's what you would find.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, for some reason, it's been taken on by Discovery Channel. And
History
I guess...
History Channel, too.
Yeah, History Channel. And apparently, Heaven's Gate believe that they have cone heads. And don't forget the movie Conehead.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they were the true aliens.
It's possible. Never know. So in order to be a perfect member, a follower had to uproot their life, shed themselves with family, friends, and possessions, and fully immerse themselves in this purification process. All that Bonnie and Marshall would tell them is that the aliens, the extraterrestrials, were supposed to return, but no one knew when. All we can do right now is just work on our purity, the purity of our soul, in order to be ready to join them when they come, in order to be worthy and righteous.
And wear your dunce cap.
Yes, exactly. It was another interesting piece, too. It was forbidden to have any friends in the group. You weren't even allowed to befriend other members in the group. If members wanted to be accepted into the higher level of being, they were expected to show no human feelings or emotions whatsoever. Their daily lives were devoted entirely to shedding and abandoning their human habits in order to attain a level of purity necessary to be accepted by the extraterrestrials. You know, you give up your husband, your wife, your children, your job, everything, your comfort. You go, you're caravanning on the coast. And with 100 other people, you're not supposed to talk to them. You're not supposed to look at them. God knows you're not supposed to sleep with them.
And you don't have genitalia.
And you don't.
In your mind, you are sexless.
Now, with a lot more people to care for, the group had to find additional ways of making money. It was back to the blood banks, the small meals, the buttered bread, and finding work wherever they could and have short-term menial jobs. So they would actually roll up on a city. They would all scatter like cockroaches, go to grocery stores, post offices, things like that. And then once they got enough money to get up and go, they would go to the next town. Because the group was garnering so much attention wherever they traveled, including from the local media, they were frequently experiencing rejection, you don't say, especially from, you guessed it, traditional religious institutions. And that actually really pissed off Marshall and Bonnie.
Oh, you don't want to piss them off. Thing one and thing two are with their cone heads on.
I mean, what do you think how do they expect the church would react?
Which church? Any church?
All of them, I'm sure.
All the churches.
In one letter to their longtime friend and follower, Morgan Walsh, Applewhite wrote, "Bonnie and I are discovering more and more that the, quote, religious and loving are the last to see or accept our truth. Also, before, in their earliest phases, Nettles and Applewhite had concocted kind of a hodgepodge of beliefs. Remember in the last episode how Bonnie was obsessed with seances and introduced spiritualism, and then they shared the sci-fi stuff? They took some from science fiction, some from spiritualism and the occult, and some from traditional Christianity. Don't forget, again, Marshall Applewhite was devoutly Christian. Now, all of that's starting to fall away, and it's solely focusing on impending doom, angry aliens, and Armageddon.
Extraterrestrial overlords. I like that.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that Armageddon. In terms of Armageddon, again, they call it the Ascension.
Sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm. Love is one. And they believed that Ascension was imminent. As we mentioned earlier, they believed that they were the, quote, two lampstands in Revelation, and they believed that they would soon be killed by the unfaithful, only to regain life 3.5 days later and rise up in a cloud. So again, they believed that they would be assassinated by people, the unrighteous, that they would regain life 3.5 days later and then rise up in a great UFO.
Not just any UFO, but a great UFO.
And then after they went up in the UFO, quote, the Lord would then pull the trigger and begin the world's destruction.
Dang.
I'm sure a lot of you are sitting there and are thinking, who the hell would believe this shit? Allow me to tell you. I have a couple of profiles of members who have joined Heaven's Gate. Some of these people, unfortunately, did pass away eventually as part of the 38, and some defected. Cheryl Butcher, 42, was a computer trainer, and she found the group during a stop in Springfield, Missouri. Her mother says that she was an all-around great person. She did a lot of volunteer work. She was sweet. She even did candy striping, which is about, like, the sweetest thing that you can do. However, she was a loner, and making friends was really, really hard for her. She was obsessed with Star Trek and science fiction. As a lot of you know, if you're into that too, it can be kind of a hobby that a lot of people aren't necessarily interested in. So Cheryl took up with them. She left to join the cult, and she would occasionally write and sneak letters home to her parents. And one said, quote, Mother, be happy that I'm happy. And then another time she ended a letter with, quote, look higher. So again, really believing in the UFO alien piece. Then we have Julie LaMontagne, 45 years old, and she was a nurse. She witnessed her best childhood friend drown to death. Her father ended up dying of cancer, and then her life fell apart. And she traveled throughout all of New England from commune to commune, trying to find internal peace from this. And she ended up finding it in Heaven's Gate, and she became Marshall Applewhite's own personal nurse. And again, she actually came from a very, very, very wealthy family. Then we have Gary Jordan, 43 years old. He was also a computer programmer. He had been obsessed with aliens and UFOs from a very young age. He was a great high school student. He ended up going to UC Berkeley on a scholarship in 1972, but ended up dropping out and getting married. He went to see a Heaven's Gate seminar at a local bookshop near Berkeley while visiting a friend. And he was really down in his life. He just didn't know what he wanted to do. He was really, again, obsessed with Star Trek and Star Wars and aliens, and he didn't really feel like he belonged in society. So one of Marshall Applewhite's biggest lines that he repeated to everyone constantly, quote, we're all caterpillars right now, but we have the ability to develop into butterflies. Gary Jordan left his wife and joined Heaven's Gate. Last one is 27-year-old David Van Sinderen and his girlfriend, 22-year-old Oregon State University botany student Susan Strom, both left their very prominent, wealthy families to join the group. Susan wrote a letter back home to her parents saying, quote, the only way I reconciled leaving you is that I can help you from the next level, God's kingdom.
The next level.
The next level. And it wasn't just everyday people that joined. One recruit, his name was John Craig, and he was actually a Republican running for the Colorado House of Representatives at the time that he joined in 1975. Heaven's Gate took in a lot of different people from all different walks of life, all different levels of success, but one thing it seems that they all have in common is that they were very much interested in science fiction and UFOs, primarily. So that is one of the most common factors. The group was starting to get restless. They toured and traveled endlessly the entire country, and they were starting to get tired of it. Marshall had promised that the spaceship was coming, and it hadn't shown up yet. No aliens had appeared, no extraterrestrials, nothing. So some young men in the group began to question the rules against sexual relations.
How dare they?
How dare they have human desire? That is kind of against the rules. At this time, some of the group members began to have sex with one another and do drugs. They smoked weed, they started having sex with one another, and they began to question the authority of Bo and Peep.
That is how it starts. Mm-hmm. The rebels, they begin partying.
Yes, the cracks are getting in there. And Bo and Peep, now we have our third new alias. Because they're Bo and Peep now because they saw themselves as shepherds of their flock.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They started trying to minimize the questioning by doing exercises on patience and how you cannot be pure unless you exercise endless patience and waiting. It didn't work. So something big was needed in order for Marshall and Bonnie to retain control of the group. And in one of the most important events in the group's history, they traveled to Waldport, Oregon. And within a few days, they actually gathered over 20 new followers.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And this is where it gets crazy. With more than 20 people going missing from a tiny town in Oregon, that made national news.
Yeah, I imagine. That's so crazy.
They called police. You know, police were called by concerned family and friends. Journalists started to investigate the disappearances. The group went underground and completely off the radar after this happened. And Walter Cronkite, the legend himself, even did a segment on it on the nightly news. And he said, quote, "A score of persons from a small Oregon town have disappeared. It's a mystery whether they've been taken on a so-called trip to eternity or simply been taken."
If this gives you any indication of how small Waldport is, right now, as of like 2018, there's only 2,217 people. And back then it was way less. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine, like, probably, like, let's say theoretically it's 1,000 people,
yeah,
and then 20 people just up and go.
Yeah, that is a huge ordeal. That makes national news right there. Walter Cronkite then turned it over and said, "Terry Drinkwater takes a look at the story." Standing in front of the Oregon Motel where the group had briefly stayed, he continued the story. He says, quote, "Rocket ships from outer space, Buck Rogers fantasy, or is it? Today, there is a group of Earthlings who believe they're on their way to rendezvous with such a ship for a trip to the unknown." And again, this is in 1975. National news. He continues, "Here along the cloud-covered coast near Newport, Oregon, a mysterious couple appeared 3 weeks ago, circulating a flyer proclaiming a UFO would soon be ready to take whoever would follow them to another life, another world. They held meetings, one at this motel, to recruit voyagers." He then went on to quote a local news person as saying the vanished people, quote, "gave away everything, including kids, all their material belongings, property, automobiles, boats, and money, and just left." And he ended his story by saying, 20 or more faithful are now apparently headed for the lonely prairie of eastern Colorado. And that's exactly what happened. As I said a moment ago, they went completely off the grid. They separated their followers and they basically said, look, you guys need to go preach and whatnot. We're going to hang out here for a little bit. And then in 2 months, we will reconvene. And so they split up the group to basically keep people from screwing and smoking weed.
That's really unfortunate. Mm-hmm. That's what Oregon's known for.
I know. But during that downtime, Marshall Applewhite and Bonnie Nettles, again, picking up press, agreed to assist two authors in writing a book. It was called UFO Missionaries Extraordinary. And the book came out in 1976. However, because the authors didn't explicitly say that Bonnie and Marshall were divine in nature, like sent from aliens as divine examples to lead the flock back home, it pissed them off. And in a New York Times article that interviewed Brad Steiger, one of the authors, he said, quote, "We did voice stress tests. They believed what they were saying. The two wanted to time the publication of the book to coincide with their anticipated assassinations. Failing that, they proposed starving themselves to death." So let's recap. Bonnie and Marshall have left. They're traveling the road. They're recruiting people, going from place to place. They've changed their doctrine countless times. They changed their names and aliases countless times. They've changed who they are countless times.
So they go from one, like, version of themselves to another. First were what? First that we were the two.
Mm-hmm.
The reincarnate of Jesus.
Guinea and pig.
Yes. And then Bo and Peep.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And they've created a literal cult, what to look for by joining a cult checklist of rules and regulations that their members have to live by.
Well, what's a cult without rules? Right. And torturing yourself to some degree. Mm-hmm. Practice your patience.
Yep.
Have no genitalia all of a sudden.
We will get there. We are going to stop here in this episode because after the group reconvenes in Wyoming and comes back together, this is when we go to the next phase. And I'm just going to give you a little bit of spoiler. The group actually lays low for almost a decade, quietly traveling, quietly doing their pamphlets and disseminating their literature. It's not until the late 80s, early 90s where they resurface in the age of the internet.
You know, what's interesting is that remember we mentioned last episode that it's not what you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
So how are we going to tell them? Are we going to tell them in the next episode?
You're just going to have to tune in and see.
You're going to have to wait.
Again, you can find us at wesawthedevil.com. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at wesawthedevil. You can find us on Instagram at wesawthedevilpodcast. If you like us, love us, enjoy the show, and want to support us, you can chill and find us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/wesawthedevil. You can also get there from our website. And again, we have merch, stickers, postcards, cool stuff, and an amazing group for the team. For as little as $3 a month.
Yeah, and you can find your ascension through our group.
Again, do not forget, we have a giveaway for the next 7 days.
Oh my God, $50.
$50 worth of merch and true crime stuff. If you're like, hey, I don't even want any of your crap, but I want some true crime goodies, then still, all you have to do is leave us a 5-star review, take a screenshot of it, and email it or post it in social media and show us. That's it, and then you're entered. Let us know. We have some goodies to give away. And that wraps it up for this week, guys.
Until next crime.